You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Chafe Lama Sports Report. Thank you for our first guest. That was Brian Keough, the great Irish golf writer. You can check him out at Irish Golf Desk. And we are still talking about the U.S. Open and then previewing our way into the Open Championship. Once again, joining us, one of the true great lions in sports writing, longtime New York Daily News columnist, and still contributing and writing books now. Welcome Hank Gola back to the show. Hank, welcome to Jay Plum, the Sports Report on Golf News Net.
Thank you, Jay. How's everything going with you?
It went fantastic for me. I had a terrific week covering the Open. I thought Boston acquitted itself quite well. I thought the country club was out of this world, and it was a heck of a tournament. How about you? What are your thoughts? We talked to Brian Keough, who was ecstatic at a UK winter. Yeah. How about you? What were your thoughts on the Open and the winner and things going forward?
My thoughts are that golf is such a wide open thing right now. And I think back, since we're going to be looking at St. Andrews in a couple of weeks, I think back to 2000 when it was Tiger, if he brought his A game, nobody was going to come close. He was just demoralizing people. And I think that there are so many bright young stars now in golf that anybody could step up at any time. There's nobody, no one could bring their A game and be guaranteed a victory these days. But there are so many more. The field is so much deeper these days that any of these guys can step up and win a major championship. And I mean, Zalatoris isn't going to be far off either from what he did in the PGA and the U.S. Open. He'll win a major, you know, down the road at some point.
Well, one of the big comparisons is back in Tiger's day, you didn't have as many golfers that were as physically fit or as physically strong as you do now, you know, 25 years later.
Well, that's true, but you still had some pretty skilled golfers. I mean, you know, you look at Mickelson and Ernie Els. These are great careers. And if Tiger's not there, they're winning more majors, more multiple majors. So while the field wasn't as deep then, I still think that Tiger was the one guy, if he brought his A game, and maybe Jack was before him, nobody was winning that week. And I don't think you could say that about anybody in this era. If they bring their A game, there's always going to be some competition from somebody.
Well, no matter who brought their A game, it didn't last for four full days. The winner of this year's U.S. Open, truth be told, was the Country Club. The club acquitted itself well. The golf course acquitted itself brilliantly. And we got an historic winner. Give us your thoughts on the play and what you saw on Championship Sunday.
Well, I mean, look, the most impressive thing about Fitzpatrick is how he's come on from being a kind of a scrawny kid to just building himself up, getting his swing speed up, and just totally changing his game. I mean, he is a power hitter now. And that combined with the other aspects of his game, his iron play and his short game, you know, it just propelled himself. So when you look at the pictures of him when he won the U.S. Amateur surrounded by his family, he was a scrawny kid. And what, 8 years later, is it 8 years, 9 years later? He's standing there, he's just a completely different guy. So when you mentioned that Tiger got into the gym and improved his swing speed and everything, I think you're looking at the same thing with guys like Fitzpatrick now, who in a matter of a few years can just get that much stronger and improve their overall game. Like you, Jay, you in the gym.
Well, when I go in the gym, it's become a better skier, not a longer golfer.
And yeah, well, I'm going to get you into my gym, and I'm going to get some yards out of you.
Well, we will talk a little bit about that at the end of the show, but give us your impressions of the play on Sunday. And in particular, yes, Fitzpatrick has put on a lot of length, and it helped at holes 5 and 8 in particular. He birdied both of those all 4 days, but he also tied for second in driving accuracy, tied for first in greens and regulation, and was number one in birdies.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much more you could say about it. I mean, the guy went out there and won the Open, and beat a pretty formidable bunch of guys, including. I mean, we have to look at Zalatoris as well. I think he's really on the verge. He's become such a good player now, I'm not sure he's going to go Lynx Golf at St. Andrews, but I think he's built for these the PGA and the U.S. Open style of play, where hitting fairways is a premium and hitting greens is a premium.
You know, Brian Keel brought up an interesting analysis earlier in the show. He said he thinks something important has changed, or at the very least that Fitzpatrick did it backwards. Okay. He said, usually they teach you golf and then they teach you length. And that's what happened with Fitzpatrick first. But he says now these younger guys, they're teaching them length first and then golf after. What are your thoughts on that phenomenon? And where do you see the game going forward? Bryson DeChambeau or Webb Simpson or a little both?
I'm not sure I'd see the game going forward with Bryson. Bryson was trying to do just too many things. I mean, there was too much going on there, basically. I mean, even the average golfer or the hacker, I mean, if you've got all this stuff going on here, you're bound for disaster, basically. And I think that's what happened with Bryson. Here's the thing. These kids are coming up. They're playing college golf now. You know, back in the day, and I don't know when I did it, but when the Europeans were kind of developing all these young stars and the Americans weren't, it was kind of an interesting phenomenon back there. But now college golf is so much stronger than it used to be. These kids are coming out of college. You know, they're playing junior golf, but the college programs are so much stronger, and they are stronger is a word. They are getting stronger. They are in the weight room. They are athletes now. They're not just golfers. They're athletes. And I think that might be a difference in how maybe U.S. golf is a little bit. And I know Fitzpatrick won and he's a European, which is great. But I think U.S. golf is now kind of up here. It kind of changed a little bit. You know, I think European golf was for many years was they were developing better players. I think the Americans are now developing better players. And I think the weight room and just athleticism has a lot to do with that.
We're talking with Hank Gola on Jay Flemma Sports Report. I am Jay Flemma, and this is Golf News Net on iHeartRadio. So, Hank, let's move a little bit forward now. We've talked a little bit about St. Andrews, but we haven't quite hit it on the head. My thoughts on St. Andrews are this: greatest golf course in the world, but for these guys, it's going to need wind. Pretty please, wind blow like a King Lear play.
Well, any Open Championship is going to need wind because that's the defense of the golf course, the weather. And it also determines the luck of the draw. I mean, you can get out there and the conditions can change from morning to afternoon. So where you get put in the draw can determine how you finish as well. I mean, it used to be the U.S. Open defined itself by narrow fairways and heavy rough. That's changed a little bit. The PGA was kind of U.S. Open light. The Masters was green complexes, a short game, and just iron play. And the Open was all about weather. It always was. And St. Andrews is, you know, I've been to St. Andrews where it's been, when Tiger won in 2005, his second Open Championship there, the fairways were running faster than the greens. and he was putting from 80 yards out with a putter.
Oh, sure. Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Right. So it the weather and the conditions dictate the Open Championship more than any other event. I mean, obviously, if the wind blows at a U.S. Open, it's going to affect things. Or if it's soggy and, you know, the ball's not going. Oh, yes. But there's nothing like an Open Championship for weather as a factor. So, yeah, we'll see what the weather is like. And when Oystein won that one year, the weather was awful. And, it takes a certain guy to be able to win in those conditions.
And it was terrible the year Zach Johnson won in 2015, too. They were all wearing sweaters.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, here's the thing about the wind, though.
Wore a sweater one year, too. He had that nice blue thing that he...
Well, he wore two sweaters. Remember when he drove the green in the playoff, he took one of the two sweaters off the cardigan.
Yeah.
And then
it's all about weather. So I do hope it blows. You don't want to see the Open played in perfect conditions. But then again, if you look back at Hoy Lake, when Tiger won there, didn't hit a driver. And it was hot, right? And you would say, right? Again, it was hard, fast conditions then, and it didn't necessarily have to blow as much, but you were getting people running into fairway bunkers. And I think Tiger, as he did in 2000, stayed out of every bunker on the golf course that year.
Well, the other thing about Hoy Lake is, or Royal Liverpool, for those of you scoring at home, is it has internal out of bounds. And so one of the other reasons why Woods didn't want to monkey around with the driver was he didn't want to be hitting three off the tee. You know, he put a four iron in the fairway, and now that's where we use Hoy Lake as a verb. When he won the PGA at Southern Hills, he Hoy Lake the place by hitting four irons and seven irons off the tee. Right. But here's the other thing about the wind.
Yeah, you would love to see the weather be a factor and for them to have to struggle and for it to be, you know, a typical Open Championship. That would be great.
The other thing about the wind, though, is a great equalizer, okay, especially if it is a crosswind. That was how Tom Watson was able to stay close at Turnberry. That's how Greg Norman was able to stay close at Birkdale, both of them at advanced age, 59 and 54, respectively. It blew a crosswind, and it flummoxed all of the young guns who weren't used to it.
Yeah, I remember standing at Turnberry on the 72nd hole, and I jumped on Watson in the fourth round and was following for most of the back nine, at least, which was the great thing about an Open Championship, because deadlines were, I mean, you didn't basically have to worry about a deadline. There was no sitting there at a Masters where, you know, the thing ends and I'm typing out a bull lead. No, you have time to do something. You're like almost like a magazine writer. But anyway, I was out there he's sitting in the middle of the fairway, and all he's got to do is basically hit the green, and he's the oldest Open Championship, the oldest major winner in history, 58.
59.
Yeah, 59. And I'm standing next to Damon Hatt, and I said, Damon, I said, we are about to witness the greatest moment in the history of sports. That's how I felt. And he hit that 8-iron too pure. And once he went off the, once he went past through the green, it was over. But, and my heart sank. It was like, not that I'm a great Tom Watson fan. I think he screwed up at the Ryder Cup, for instance, but that moment, I mean, you just wanted to see it so badly, to see history being made. And it was just such an empty feeling. And of course, once he got into the playoff with Stewart Cink, it was going to be, he wasn't going to be.
Yeah, he got filleted.
Right. But, you know, there you go. That's perfect example of the rub of the green.
Well, we weren't rooting for Watson. We were rooting for the story.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And the story was Watson becoming the oldest major champion ever.
By a mile and a half. Yeah. By 13 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank God his sweaters got better as the week went on, too. Because if he'd have won a claret jug and the atrocity that he'd have had on Thursday, okay, my Uncle Gus called. He wants the sweater back.
So anyway, that's the Open. I mean, anything can happen. And, you know, it's kind of up, you know, the I used to cover the Ryder Cup over there, and you would listen to the BBC they had the headphones, and you would listen to them. And one of the phrases they love to use is it's in the laps of the gods. You know,
I haven't heard Ian Carter use that quite yet, but we'll come back to Ian Carter.
This is pre-Ian, actually. And I think that that's the one championship of all of golf that is most in the laps of the gods.
Well, since you threw it to Ian Carter, I'm going to throw it to Ian Carter. You'd have loved it, Hank. We were all sitting there on Sunday at about 6:15. And, you know, it's funny how a room of 275 journalists can get awful quiet when we're all working. And, you know, there's just that very quiet buzz as we're all sitting there and we're coming down. And then all of a sudden you hear it from one of the radio booths in the back. What a putt from Matt Fitzpatrick! It's in the hole and he's in the lead! And so everybody, okay, from Herrig to Fergie to Ron Green, me, we all turn around and we're looking back and everybody just starts chuckling, okay? And Ian just keeps on going. This is going to be it. A UK winner can finally make vengeance upon the heads of Martin and Ray. And when he got done, we gave him the most sarcastic smattering of applause I've ever heard come from 275 journalists.
Yeah. And a similar story with Bob Bupka at one of the Opens. I think it was at Royal Troon, but yeah.
And Bob Bupka, I think he did that also at Torrey Pines in 2008 on Saturday. Okay, we hear a loud, and it's in the hole, and Woods is in the lead. And meanwhile, Woods is still, you know, talking to Stevie and looking over the putt, and we're all turned around looking at Bupka. Well, everybody, that's a little bit what it's like covering a major championship on a Sunday. So, Hank, tell us a little bit more about who are you going to be. If you had to lay a little bit of money down at Ladbrokes, who would you bet on?
You know, last time I was on your show, Jay, I was kind of all over Rory. I think it's time that Rory steps up. I mean, I don't know if he will, and I'm kind of tired of waiting for him to step up, but I think that the time is right for him to do it. And again, it would be another UK winner, but I think Rory is the guy in the driver's seat this time.
Depending on the weather and how about a sleeper pick or two?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's not exactly a sleeper pick, but Xander Schauffele's record is pretty good in links golf, so I'd keep an eye on him. He hasn't won a major yet either, and so I definitely keep an eye on him, and also Niemann as well.
Joaquin Niemann, Chilean golfer. Niemann.
Yeah, so
the one who stuck his foot in his mouth when Mito Pereira was about to win the PGA Championship almost.
Victor Hovland might have. I mean, look, again, it depends on the draw. I mean, it's such a difficult championship to pick because you don't know what side of the draw they're going to be on and what kind of weather they're going to get. And again, it's not like Tiger. I mean, Tiger was an easy thing. If he brings his A game, he wins. So, and he did. He won a few claret jugs in his day. So, and again, there's another thing. How is Tiger going to play? Is Tiger going to take his last walk across the Swilken Bridge?
I think he is. I hear that he is in the field.
I know he is in, but is this going to be it? When I covered 2000, when he won in 2000, there was a great little scene. Jack Nicklaus was finishing up his round, and everyone thought it was going to be, even he thought it was going to be his last Open Championship. He came back in 2005 and played 5 years later. But at the time, he was finishing up his round, didn't make the cut, and Tiger was about to go out to start his second round, and he had this scene of reverence at the 18th green and this scene of anticipation right at the first tee, and it was just kind of a changing of the guard moment, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm just curious as to whether this is going to be Tiger's last hurrah. Obviously, to ask him to play four great rounds of golf is almost too much for him right now. I mean, every major he plays now, he goes out. In fact, any tournament he plays, he goes out. He'll play a decent first round. You know, he'll get progressively
weaker,
and then he just can't do it because he can't physically do it. And we saw that at the PGA. Now, obviously, St. Andrews, he knows every blade of grass at that place, and he knows how to get around it, obviously. But I still think it's going to be too much for him. I would have thought that had he not, you know, look at his right leg now. It's just withered when you see him in shorts, right? Had he not had that accident and just, which was his own fault, by the way, I'm not excusing him for that, but had he not gone through that, I think he could have actually come back and contended this week if he had not had that accident, simply because
perhaps
he does know St. Andrews. And again, if he got the luck of the draw and everything else, I think he could have been kind of in the mix on Sunday with a chance. So, but anyway, 2000 was a great illustrative moment to see Nicklaus on 18. And I just remember that. That just sticks in my mind as a changing the guard moment. And two of the greats, obviously. I mean, you don't see that very often where, you know, Tiger about, you know, 2000 was at the height of his powers, and kind of Jack just winding down, obviously didn't want to play, what did he call, ceremonial golf.
Yes, right.
Just to see that, the juxtaposition of that was pretty cool at the time.
All right, so Hank, earlier you were mentioning that you've got some, I don't know whether it's a trainer or whether it's a strength and conditioning guy or whether...
I keep flexible, I have to, yeah.
Okay, well, you know, everybody that's listening, Hank has been trying to get me to abandon my longtime coach, Bernie Hersig of the Binghamton Bearcats. Go Binghamton University. Blue, green and white, fight.
and why don't you
tell us a little bit about your fellow and what his name is and what he does and how he can help me and the other golfers.
Well, it's not a coach. He doesn't do anything with your swing, but he assesses what part of your body kind of needs attention, and that might be kind of failing you. And as you get older, you really, the one thing you need to play golf is flexibility. So his name is Jim LaFrat. He is a TPI Performance Institute level 3 instructor. So that's as high as you could get. And he basically knows anatomy inside and out. And, I'll go there once a week, and I'm not throwing iron around. I'm not pumping iron or anything like that.
Are you doing yoga or something?
No, it's a lot of flexibility. It's mostly flexibility, TRX cables. You know, you'll do stuff like push-ups or stuff, but you'll do it with TRX cables. It's mostly just to get your body to move in the way it's supposed to move and not to kind of lose flexibility and lose motion. I think it's really important because if you lose flexibility, you're done. If you can't make a turn, you're done in golf, basically. And to hang on to that is very important the older you get. So I had a QL injury, and a QL is the big, here I am getting technical, but it's the stabilizing muscle in your back. It really doesn't
do much. Yeah, the quadrilateral, right?
Right. It just basically, it's the big muscle. It just stabilizes thing. It doesn't really, it's not like it moves a joint or anything, but when you rip it, you know it. And if you've had a lifetime, of sitting around in front of a computer, as you get older, you're going to start feeling your QL. If you've seen anybody in the golf course, older guys just basically, like that, holding their back, it's pretty much a QL injury. And I kind of torn mine.
I'll look for that in the media center next time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I kind of tore it. I didn't realize I tore it, but I tore it by picking my little dog up with my left hand, and I felt my right side go.
Okay, wait. How little is your little dog?
She was 16 pounds. And she, little pug, and she was kind of like, I was sitting at the breakfast table and I reached down, you know, she was kind of there and fussing around, and I kind of reached down to pick her up. And as I reached down and picked her up on this side, my right side went, and it's like, oh, you know, you just feel it. And I didn't know what it was. I was going to a chiropractor. He really didn't do much for me. And then I finally, somebody told me at the club, you just go see Jim LaFrette. And just by assessing me and doing these kind of tests, he said, you got a QL. In fact, he knew I had a QL when I walked in. He said, that's QL. And just by, we did a lot of rehab and, you know, some stuff. And I went from not being able to swing a club more than three quarters to being able to swing a club again in a month's time, when I had wasted like months going to a chiropractor. So, but that's my story. And I mean, I really do. If anybody's out there who's getting on in age, and the most important thing you can do is take care of your body and remain flexible. Even Arnold said that. That's the most important thing, was flexibility. He did a lot of work as he got older. Not that his swing held up, but that's another story. But yeah, flexibility and working out and just doing the right things, keeping active, the best thing you can do.
All right. Well, Hank, tell us one more time how we can get a hold of your fella, and then tell everybody where they can read your stuff.
Oh, well, just... My guy's in Oakland, New Jersey. His name is Jim LaFrette. His gym is known as Core Performance Golf. But if you're not in the New Jersey area, you could just Google your local it's called TPI, Performance Center Professional, and get into the gym and start working. Yeah. And then I don't know where you could read my stuff anymore. I Met Golfer is where I am right now, but... I'm not as prolific as I used to be. So.
That's like saying my ex-girlfriend occasionally went out with other men. All right, everybody, on that note, we're going to call it an end to this edition of Jay Flemma Sports Report. I am Jay Flemma. You're listening to the Golf News Network on iHeartRadio. We will see you all next week for the Open Championship. Hank, thank you very much. We will catch up with you soon.
Sure thing, Jay. Take care.
Everybody have a great week, and we will see you with strawberries and cream from St. Andrews next week.